So I'm kind of plastered to CNN watching the coverage of this happen, and they've become very good at what they do in covering it. So my kudos go out to CNN. Their weather guy is superb, and they've just been doing a really good job. So kudos to CNN. My guest tonight, Dr. Nick Begich, we're talking about something very much, perhaps, I have to throw that caveat in, perhaps related, and that is the HARP facility in Alaska, and I might add elsewhere. Could they be in some way attempting to affect the weather? And we would hope, optimistically, they would try to affect it for the better. If so, then it hasn't been working out too well this year so far. Back to Dr. Begich, and by the way, your questions in a moment. One of the sounds made by HARP. Actually, we have quite a number here. I've played these previously, recorded some number of months ago now. Pretty strange stuff. All going to the ionosphere. Thought you ought to hear it. We've got Dr. Nick Begich here tonight. And that is weird, isn't it? And we're about to turn him over to you. That's a classic one right there. You're hearing HARP. Listen carefully. Doctor, those are strange sounds, aren't they?
Yeah, you know, actually, in one experiment, they played Wagner, you know, got the ionosphere to sing Wagner.
Did they really?
Yeah, this was done actually... through the transmitter in Norway, and it was reported on BBC TV when they did their story on these instruments and were disclosing sort of what's going on, you know, globally in this area. They came to Alaska and did some filming and actually traveled literally around the world.
Okay, let me, for your sake, kind enough to come on here and tell us about all of this. How do people order, if they wish to, your DVDs, for example, on mind control?
Sure. We have a toll-free I can give out and a website. The toll-free is 888-690-1277. Again, that's 888-690-1277. And then the website is earthpulse.com, E-A-R-T-H-P-U-L-S-E. And we're linked to Coast to Coast AM tonight, so people can go and check that out. And gives you a lot of information on our DVDs and books and publications, as well as our lectures that we have scheduled already this year, getting scheduled up for next year. So, you know, a lot of good stuff there and a lot of information there, actually, on some of the topics we're covering tonight. And
when you do lecture on HARP, what generally is the reaction of the audience? I'm sure you have people coming up to you after the lecture and talking to you.
Oh, yeah. You know, we've lectured in 22 countries. I've worked in a lot of different venues, and you know, in the course of that, we've met a lot of pretty interesting folks, both in and out of the sciences, and I think that's been perhaps some of the best of this. You know, in our work in the European Parliament, I was approached by the technology advisor to Santer at the time, and was assured that they would look into this, you know, this whole issue and would report on it. And actually, what they did is did a comprehensive report on energy generally in terms of its effects on health and environment, and really began to look at this whole area, and then did quite a bit more in the area of non-lethal weapons and creating policy standards there for NATO Europe, as well as a number of other areas where initiatives were taken, you know, partially from the information we provided and the networks we were able to connect with in Europe. So lectures have been extremely valuable in getting this story out.
All right, here come some comments from my audience or questions.
Okay,
first time caller line, your turn with Dr. Nick Begich. Hi. Hello. First time caller line.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, Dr. Begich, it seems to me that you rarely mention the woodpecker grid system that the Soviet Union developed. It went online in 1976.
He mentioned it earlier tonight.
Only when you had to pull it out of him. But the European Union wants to bring down HAARP. All of these countries want to bring down HAARP. But I think HAARP is the only thing that stands between the destruction of the United States and countering HAARP and countering woodpecker grid.
Yeah, well, you know, the woodpecker we actually did mention even in the first publication of Angels Don't Play This Harp as the analogy, because the Russians were actually making overtures to the United States in the early 90s to jointly work on this exact kind of initiative using phased arrays for missile defense applications and other applications. And we rejected it at the time. And the reason we did is we were already advancing our own systems in that area. And really, the Russians' overture was made for the lack of resources, I would guess, more than anything else, and an interest in collaboration for other reasons. But, yeah, absolutely. The Russians were sort of the leaders in the beginning of a lot of this. And even when you talk about energy systems targeting human beings, you know, the microwave beaming of the U.S. Embassy is the classic example.
Sure.
Of that kind of activity.
You know, what do you think would have happened had, I think it was Malaysia, taken the Russians up on their offer to create a cyclone? What do you think would have happened?
Well, I think there were probably a lot of people shuffling around at that moment, you know. I think it may have created some problems. I mean, because if they'd actually pulled it off and demonstrated that publicly, you know, that opens up a whole lot of discussion that perhaps some folks would rather not have right now. And
I would think.
And when you see, you know, the last Three Secretary of Defense alluding to this sort of reopening of the treaty and abandoning it, you know, it speaks volumes for where we're headed. And I think when you look at even the published materials, and there's not been a lot, but there's been some, the U.S. Army's publication, you know, Potential Weather Modification Capabilities, was an Air Force 2025 document. And, you know, they talk about, you know, all the kinds of things we've been talking about tonight. And all of those are prohibited under international treaty today.
Well, I just can't imagine anybody saying anything about it, Doctor. I'll tell you something. As a ham operator, yeah. It's well known that if you move into a neighborhood and you put an antenna or a tower up, everybody in the neighborhood who has any little flicker or disturbance on their television or their toast is overdone, it's all the fault of that tower.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, the analogy, I mean, if you look at HAARP, if they were to actually announce that they're able to affect weather in one way or the other, anything that went wrong, including a lot of things these days, right?
Yeah.
As you look at your television, they'd all be blamed on HAARP.
Absolutely. And that's kind of, you know, when I said earlier, it's sort of a metaphor because, you know, it happens. Every time there's a tsunami, an earthquake, anything, you know, now, you know, people want to blame this one system. And yet there are many technologies that have been spoken about in the open literature that could create the same kinds of effects. It's really, when you think about it, it's maybe simpler than we imagine. When we were talking about Tesla in one of the earlier programs, and I have all of his published papers in English. And when you read them and you start to think about what that was all about and what's really going on, is it was all about energy, oscillating energy fields and manipulating them for very specific effects. And
I've got a question for you. I'm really, really interested in Tesla, of course. And I guess I would like your view. If you've done all of that reading, Doctor, was Tesla, was he a mad scientist?
No, not at all.
I mean, obviously he was brilliant.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, everyone who's brilliant that I've ever met is a little quirky, too. So
yes.
He wasn't exempt from that.
So perhaps a little quirky, but right on the money, you think, with...
Oh, yeah. I think his capacity for invention was pretty unique. He could actually envision a design and testing of an apparatus and then built the first time every time.
Well, if you separate Tesla myth from reality, if that's even possible, do you think he created earthquakes? Do you think he shook buildings? Do you think he did some of the wilder things that are attributed to him?
Yeah, I do, because it's really what he was doing is finding those points of instability that you could trigger using resonance as a basic ingredient in his whole thinking. And it was oscillating fields, coherent energy fields, that he was able to manipulate and control for various effects. And I think it's as simple as that. That's why you start seeing these references in the open literature, because it is probably quite simple, and it's as simple as dialing the right station. And, you know, what in literally that way, and I think it's a matter of understanding energy and those relationships between the things you're trying to affect. And when you look at oscillating energy fields and stuff at Tesla, which all of his work was about that, there's something else that shows up as these violations of the so-called, you know, rules of physics in terms of speed of light, and he gets these effects that sort of violate the rule. And what I think he was manipulating were secondary effects, scalar effects that were much more profound, and he understood that.
Well, here's something I'd like to know. When he died, the government rushed in and confiscated all of his papers. We all know that.
Right.
Since they did that, you would think that if they were relatively harmless or crackpot theories or, I don't know, whatever, they'd be made public. Now, what's become of all this stuff that we ran in and secretly grabbed up?
Well, some of it went actually was, strangely enough, ended up back in Yugoslavia. I don't know exactly what the mechanism was there, but then the bulk of it was just gone. I mean, it's out of circulation.
Gone.
But when you look at what was published in English and German, it fills several volumes. His patent record is pretty substantial. And when you start to look at that, and if you read it, sort of take a look at all of it and then start thinking about it in consideration of other fields of science he was interested in, you see a more complete picture of what he was about. And what he was really about was, in fact, manipulating energy fields in very precise ways with the understanding that underlying all physical matter was energy in and of itself. And so,
well, what do you think we did with all of these papers? Did we shred them, burn them, lose them?
Now, the Roswell things, we
lost all those records, right?
Right. I think a lot of this, you know, what you see in the open literature is like the grain of sand on the beach of information. And, you know, we do a fairly good job of rooting out the documents that are public. And, you know, I think there's probably a lot to be said for where military science is today, and it's probably much further along than most of us imagine. And the advantages that show up when you start talking about weather modification is the advantages of waging covert wars, and the advantage of that in terms of governments is huge in terms of what one government might consider
All right, well, again, we've done a bad job this year because it's going to affect our gross national product. It's been so bad. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Dr. Nick Begich. Hi.
Good evening, Art and Dr. Begich. This is Blair in Sedona, Arizona.
Yes, sir.
Hey, how are you doing?
Hi, Nick. How are you?
I'm great.
Hey, I have a question and a follow-up if time allows.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, one possible solution, you know, for those intent on living in hurricane zones. Earlier this month, I house sat for 1 week in a solar and wind-powered 2,000 cubic foot masonry dome, structurally sound for 140 to 150 mile per hour sustained winds. Right,
they're
Nick?
Very nice.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, as to HAARP agitating the ionosphere, you know, no safeguards. Nick, you said compartmentalization exists within bureaucracies. Bureaucracies have foremost interest, which appears to service and keep maintaining themselves. Do you have any ideas about policies and organizational structures that can accommodate and, let's say, interact with a new social structure that will simultaneously protect our rights?
Yeah, you know, this is a good question. You know, Tom Spencer, while he was still in the European Parliament, was going to pursue this, and we had done a paper that suggested that there needs to be extensions of whistleblower mechanisms for both the private sector and government, where when you're developing technologies that work against human interests, that there ought to be a way to have an impartial ombudsman-type structure so that you could address some of these things and do it in a way that doesn't damage people's career forever. You know, I mean, the threat of people working in these programs as disclosure is you're done.
Yes.
And so you really have to balance that national interest against the public's right to know, and I think we need to create institutions at this time that can address that.
Yeah. And you mentioned the drug war, terrorism, and all of those fear-based things that got us into this situation. Well, here's a simplistic answer, and of course I'd like you to comment on that. How about legalizing drugs, reducing fear through a more equitable distribution of resources?
well, you know, I think of it, you know, if you call it a war on drugs, it's been a pretty big failure. But, you know, the fact of the matter is what shows up is this discussion of, you know, fear. And, you know, these things that have happened with terrorism in the country are pretty phenomenal. But when you look at their impact on the general attitude of people in terms of what they're willing to tolerate, it's dramatic. And I think that's, you know, when that level of freedom is at stake and technology is advanced to the point where a lot more can happen now than ever before in terms of how technologies are used for a more directed and controlled society, if you will. And that's where we're at. I mean, whether it's gathering information or what the European Parliament refers to as data valence, methods of using information to really make sweeping conclusions about individuals and populations. And there's ways of manipulating then now data and information and feeding it back to people in pretty dramatic ways. When we talked about this thing in Iraq and the first Gulf War about being able to embed a signal on radio broadcasts, that's been used commercially in Japan for dissuading shoplifters in department stores. But think about those technologies applied to political races.
I heard it was actually being used here as well.
Yeah, when you start thinking about this is like the most profound technology devised. When you look at a publication by the U.S. Army War College, it was called an article called "The Mind Has No Firewalls" back in 98.
The Mind Has No Firewalls.
Right. It was a reprint of an earlier article by a military journal in Russia called Orienteer, and it talked about being able to utilize all kinds of methods. In fact, I'll read the one-liner out of this. It kind of summarizes what's here, and it says, "A psychotronic generator which produces a powerful electromagnetic emanation capable of being sent through telephone lines, TV, radio network supply pipes, and incandescent lamps. The signal would manipulate the behavior of those in contact with the signal," unquote. In other words, just using those things to carry a signal in, you can manipulate anyone in close proximity to those energy sources.
Gotcha. Here comes a quick one, maybe. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Begich. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, my name's Steve, and I'm from Missouri.
Yes, sir.
Back in 82, I had the privilege to repair electronic gear at White Sands Missile Base.
Ah.
And as I was pulling in, I noticed, why in the heck would they need all those towers? Well, I left that company and ended up moving back to Missouri.
Towers? What do you mean, radio towers?
Radio towers.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Ray. Of towers that look like there's going to be antennas mounted on.
Oh, you mean similar to perhaps HARP?
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. So I didn't think any more about it, and years went by. Relocated back to Missouri, and I'm going out to Scott Air Force Base, which is on the Illinois side. And as I'm going through Mascoute, Illinois there towards the base, I look to my right, and what do I see? I see towers everywhere with an antenna array. And I'm thinking, those are some strange antennas. Look, some are a little different. So I went onto the base and repaired the gear. And I was asking the gentleman, what is that? He says, oh, well, they're doing some scientific testing.
Uh-huh.
Well, within 3-4 months, I was viewing television. I don't know what channel it was. Either it was Discovery or, and there's a guy that comes on and he says, yeah, there's these arrays that they're building. What they're doing is they're going to punch holes in the ionosphere so they can
no kidding
launch magnetically.
Now let me get this straight. It's on an Air Force base in Missouri. Once again, the man who really started asking all the hard questions about HARP, he is that man, Dr. Nick Begich. And I'm curious, Dr. Begich, what, going back to when you began to speak out about all of this,
right?
What triggered it? Do you recall?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was a short article I read in an Australian publication. It was about 5 column inches talking about this facility in Alaska. And quite frankly, it was making, these same claims of being able to affect weather systems and being able to affect generation of ELF waves for earth-penetrating tomography and so on. I didn't believe it, So, I'm kind of a curious person. And Alaska's maybe a big geographic area, but a small population. I hadn't heard anything about this project in our local media. So as I began to inquire and start to look at the environmental impact statements and then the military's pronouncements and then some of the technical memorandum on the project and start sending it to engineers and researchers who were encouraging me to go ahead and write on the subject, and we published an article first in Nexus, of all places, and then that led to meeting Gene Manning, who was following the same issue in a number of events where we wrote Angels Don't Play This Harp, and that began the whole exercise on this technology. And then really my interest in electrophysiology, the effect of electromagnetic fields on the human body, is what really struck me with HARP initially. And then when you started looking at sort of what else was going on in the sciences in this area, that became pretty disconcerting and really led to feeling like that was maybe a good place to spend some time as a researcher, really educating the public, being that sort of translator of complicated science by working with a lot of specialists in a number of fields.
Well, it seems to me, though, that after all you've done, I mean, if you were to, for example, get to the facility, they wouldn't exactly roll out the red carpet and start the marching band for your arrival.
No. In fact, you know, there was a lot of problems along the way, you know, as it relates to some of this. And, you know, Tom Spencer, who chaired Foreign Affairs, you know, he was asked to, you know, not put these sections in, and the State Department had pressured him and committee members to, you know, withhold their support for it. And, you know, and it didn't happen. 3 days after the resolution passed, Tom Spencer's political career ended in a scandal in Great Britain that, you know, if not the most coincidental thing in the world, just the way it all unraveled.
All right. A lot of people want to say something. So
sure, let's go.
First time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Bigage. Hello.
Yeah, good morning, Art. Good morning, Nick.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to know, Art, you asked him a question earlier about other governments and other countries having involvement with the HARP program.
Yes.
And if we remember correctly, when we first sent our U.S. troops over to Iraq, there was that huge dust storm that kind of hindered them for, caused a lot of problems.
I recall, yes.
Right.
Yeah, right. So did they cause that dust storm? Is that the question?
Yeah, if there was any involvement.
All right, Doctor, how about it?
Well, you know, I don't know that they did, but, you know, this is, again, the kind of technology we're talking about. You know, can you create these effects? And the answer is yes, according to what's shown up in public literature. The fact that...
So you're saying could have been.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's where this stuff gets really tough, because without international monitoring, which means a certain level of sophistication on the part of those that are making those observations, you got to know what to look for, you know, that's where it really needs to start. And, you know, some of this technology, you know, when you think about it, the idea of transferring, the way technology works is we're very, very dependent on almost every kind of technological thing that affects our lives in the West, and our vulnerability to systems that use that as a vehicle for weapons applications is pretty amazing.
Boy, you keep weapons comes up a lot. Languishing east of the Rockies was that caller. I'm sorry I left you on hold there too long. In Missouri,
no,
he was talking about the antennas in Missouri, right, caller? And Illinois?
Yes. Illinois, yeah.
Illinois. And so he's suggesting that there's more to HARP than just Alaska.
Yeah, I would agree. And
you do.
Rosalie Bertel reported on a Canadian system of arrays. Rosalie was a physicist and was the lead physician. She's also an MD in Bhopal for the World Health Organization after that disaster. Very prominent person. She testified with us in the European Parliament on these types of weapon systems. The European system, the EasyCAT system, exists and is acknowledged.
All right, caller. So the answer to the question is yes, there could be associated systems. And
that,
maybe that was one of them. You never know.
Could be.
Right. What about the launching they're blowing holes in the atmosphere to launch magnetically induced catapult spaceships through the ionosphere so that their fuel can be used to go on to Mars?
All right, well, I don't know about that.
You know, what I can say is one of the earlier ideas was of being able to take energy in form of radio frequency, and by focusing it the way they can, transfer it extremely efficiently for energizing low-orbiting space platforms, which change, you know, a whole bunch in terms of dimensions of warfare. If you can maintain low orbits, which require larger amounts of energy, but if you can do it efficiently with these kinds of transmitters, you really could change, you move space platforms into, literally, warfare platforms into space, you change the dimension of warfare.
Now, I haven't been exactly counting the number of times you've said warfare and weapons, but it has been a lot.
Well, you know, it's really the essence of HARP. I mean, it's DARPA's deal,
essence
and that's what they're interested in. The applications as they apply to weapons applications is what military research is all about. They don't do it for the good of mankind.
Well, back when you and I began these interviews, there was some more of that good of mankind stuff in there than there was weapons and military.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's some interesting applications with HAARP, and unfortunately, in the 11 years that we followed this project, none of those are really being explored. And those are the ones that deal with perhaps mitigating some of the big issues of the day. You know, if ozone depletion is really a problem, Ben Eastland's concepts in terms of generating ozone using these systems becomes pretty interesting.
You betcha. And I just can't believe they haven't asked. Military leaders would have to ask with what's going on in our world right now. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Bigich.
Yes, Art. This is Chuck in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Oh, way up in Fairbanks.
Yeah, right next door. And I had talked to you several years ago, Art, and you'd actually had my picture on your website. I'm the guy that buys and sells mammoth tusks and ivory.
Of course.
Yeah, and we, you know, I buy from the remote Eskimo villages, and a lot of them are just literally washing away, and we're finding quite a few tusks this year. But I wanted to ask Nick about two questions, and one is about Poker Flat, which is right over the hill from us. It's kind of a top secret site that was supposedly just researched with the university.
Right.
And I have another question, but can you answer that one first?
Poker Flats is a federally funded rocket range. It's been funded to probably in excess of $100 million over the years, maybe quite a bit more than that now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's used, it also has a small phased array that's used as high pass. It's used in conjunction with HAARP for some of its applications. And, you know, quite a bit of atmospheric climate research takes place at University of Alaska Fairbanks and through the Geophysical Institute, as well as now a fair amount of military research.
Okay. And also, my next question is 2 years ago, we had one of the strongest earthquakes in 40-some years,
right.
And it was located, the fault line, the epicenter, was not far from the HAARP array in the Copper River Valley. Is that just a coincidence? And why would they locate HAARP in an area that was so prone to earthquakes? I know there hadn't been any there for a long time before.
Well, there's a reason why they put HAARP where it is, right, Doctor?
Yeah, there's several, actually, and seismic stability wasn't really so much of an issue.
So why did they put it there?
It was a location in proximity to the magnetic field lines. The further north you go, the easier it is to move energy into those magnetic field lines because they intersect the Earth at the poles. So ideally, you want to be close to large energy sources, natural gas, ideally, that you can then convert eventually to electrical power and then, you know, fire up a pretty good-sized array.
So you want to fire this at a location where you can have the most effect, and that's along those magnetic lines.
Right, and so ultimately you'll see these appear in the furthest northern regions where there's gas supplies. In Alaska, that happens to be the north slope of Alaska. So you expect to see that eventually developed as these technologies get proven out with this what they call a developmental prototype, the first array that they've constructed.
Okay. All right. International Line, you're on the air with Dr. Bigich. Hi.
Hey, Art. How you doing? Hey, Dr. Bigich. How are you?
Good, thank you.
It's Wayne calling from the South Carolina currently.
Yes, sir.
I guess the question I have is sort of like a building question. Our Earth is protected by a magnetic field, correct?
Yes.
Okay, that magnetic field is generated by the molten middle of the planet?
Well, it's by a complex number of interactions. It's both the solar activity affecting magnetic field lines, which are by the rotation of the planet, and the whole dynamic it creates those magnetic field lines, like a big magnet would in a science experiment from high school. You get those same kind of magnetic field lines.
All right. Stay close to the phone for me. I think we lost that last caller. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Nick Bigich. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
How are you doing today?
Fine. What is your first name?
My first name is Scott, and I'm from Jacksonville, Florida.
Florida. Okay.
Yes. I'm calling to see about, I grew up in a home where, you know, the media pretty much was a source of information. And then in the 90s, I learned about Operation HAARP and nanotechnology. And I was just curious about the, as far as the surface, I feel, you know, I was wondering how accurate and informed we are with the news media and what there might be as far as if they're good to use as a source or if they're reliable.
How reliable is media on this subject, you mean?
I would say just, I'm trying to think of the best way to state the question is the reliability of our media based on unknowns that we are learning about.
Well, you know, part of it, you know, I think what you're driving at is this idea of, you know, a lot of the reporting that's done today is not really investigative reporting. It's really just press release.
Most of it, doctor.
Posting, yeah. And so when you're talking about complex science issues, it even becomes more difficult. And really, when you think about it, they're the most important issues that we face today, because what makes governments powerful in the world today is the technologies they command. So, you know, we need to have at least some kind of a conceptual knowledge. We don't have to know how to build this stuff any more than we, most of us anyway.
Or what can make them weak is what they don't command, as is being constantly demonstrated to us by our apparent inability to control the course of the hurricane. I mean, you don't want to think that we're controlling and making this happen.
No. And I, you know, I've heard those kind of assertions being made, and, you know, people are commenting in that way. And I don't think that's constructive unless you can really demonstrate. And you know how particular I have been over the years with documents. You know, that's kind of,
of course,
my method of the proof is in the paper, you know. And, you know, a lot of researchers use word-of-mouth testimony or, you know, that kind of, or theorizing on their own, and I don't do that. And I think it's dangerous to do it. The technologies we can demonstrate through the literature existing and being advanced, and then the ethical questions that surround it, are the ones that at least we've tried to stimulate, and in some cases been, you know, more successful than others. And I think ultimately, you know, the technology shouldn't be so scary. You know, I mean, we drive our cars every day, yet we can't work on them. You know,
it's only scary because we don't know what the hell they're doing.
Right.
Wildcard line, you're on the air with Dr. Begich. Hello.
Yeah, Art 73 is Paul out in Vancouver, Washington.
Yes.
I'm a certified EPA microbiologist, chemist. I shouldn't say microbiologist because that's hunting season, those guys. Anyway, my question is, why is the signature, I'm like Art, I'm a 73 guy, ham radio operator, I put a microphone on my Sonicator one on, and it has a 83% exact same signature as your harp and burst. And those bursts kill bacteria and disrupt cells. And why are they doing that?
All right, well, first of all, I don't know if we know that's true, that these kind of signals, when they return to Earth, have some effect on at the bacteria. Maybe they do.
Well, here's the thing, is this is where whether they're deliberately affecting another system by operating in one regime to accomplish one thing, and this is where those, we were talking about window frequencies, you know, in the ELF range, which is used for earth-penetrating tomography. This happens to be places within the frequency ranges that are also biologically active in the course of humans. But when you start to look at all of the electromagnetic interactions that surround us today that man's created, and then start to think about it, I mean, we have 200 million times more radio frequency energy around us today than nature produced.
Like a giant soup, doctor.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, from that, most of it's just like the static between the stations. But occasionally we develop systems that sort of trip over ourselves. We don't even see ourselves doing it. And I think that's the stage of development that we're in, is you see a lot of literature emerging very rapidly talking about electromagnetic field effects on living organisms, still highly debated, but nonetheless, you cannot argue with the amount of literature that's been produced in the scientific community showing those effects, and the military seeking those effects for applications in terms of weapon systems. And
some
when you look
world.
At the whole array, here's the science of the day that could perhaps enhance human performance to unprecedented levels.
Save the day or ruin it.
East
of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Begich. Not a lot of time. Hi.
That's right. Dr. Begich, you used the domino effect analogy earlier in the program. I'd like you to apply that principle to fundraising and let us know the next time you come on this program how we can start sending money to you in $30 contributions a month, how we can get wills made out for the benefit of a foundation that will advance what you're doing. And let's not beat around the bush anymore. Let's get down to business and get something done.
All right. Well, there's somebody who wants action.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's part of what the Lay Foundation is being established to accomplish. And it's been put together by one of the heirs of Herman Lay, who was the founder of Lay Potato Chips at merger with Frito and PepsiCo. So she is actually created. Dorothy Lay has created a foundation. I'm their executive director and a member of the board to do exactly that, to make sure that we can get this information out. One of the things we'll be doing is putting together a website with our entire research bibliography eventually loaded into it, and making that available to researchers, politicians, and media, where it might be more useful than sitting in our, you know, in our library just gathering dust.
Excellent, so, Doctor. Listen, we're out of time.
Okay, we'll do
the
this
number
again.
The number to order the DVD, of course we'll do it again. Number to order the DVD is 888-690-1277. Mind control, that's what it's about. 888-690-1277. Correct, Doctor?
That's it.
All right, buddy. Listen, thank you for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me, and I'll get hold of Dr. Eason. We'll see if we can do it again and maybe have a really interesting...
Looking forward to it. Take care. Dr. Nick Begich, don't forget, if you've got a good ghost-to-ghost story, write a little synopsis, put your phone number at the bottom, and we'll call you. A live ghost-to-ghost coming up October 31st.